This is PGI. Please stand by. We are about to begin. Good morning and thank you for joining the Hospice New Zealand Palliative Care Lecture Series. Our thanks to Genesis Oncology Trust for their continued sponsorship, which allows us to bring you these lectures. Please be advised that today's call is being recorded, 7th of April 2016. Our speaker today is Professor Heather McLeod. Heather is an actuary and consultant and has worked in palliative care both here in New Zealand and in South Africa. We are delighted she can join us to present today. Welcome, Heather. Please go ahead.
Rowan, thank you very much, and a really good morning to everyone around the country. It's really lovely to be speaking to you, and I'm also hugely amused by technology. I'm sitting in the mountains in Hanmer. It's a gorgeous autumn morning here. And Rowan, believe it or not, is sitting in Ireland, and we're able to talk to you all the way around the country. You have a set of slides in front of you, I hope. I'll be talking to the slide numbers, which are the bottom right-hand corner of the slides. And as usual, I do have a lot of information to share. It comes from three recent projects with three different clients, and I want to share some of that with you as it pertains to ethnicity in the palliative care space. So I'm going to start slide two. I'm going to say a little bit about this concept of super diversity. I'm going to look at the ethnicity of the births, population, and deaths, say some things about how we collect and report on ethnicity, and then look at the evidence from three projects. So the ethnicity of deaths in New Zealand, the historic picture. That work was completed only 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'll be looking at the future projections. That work is about 4 months, 5 months old now. And then the ethnicity of patients and deaths for hospices. And that work is about to be released in the next week or so. So we're really up-to-date material on all of this. I'll finally talk a little bit about why ethnicity collection matters. So, slide three. Statistics New Zealand in the census of 2013 talked about the changes in identification with ethnicity groups from the previous census, which was 2006. And it's a bit of a surprise to see that every major ethnicity group increased, even the European ethnicity by 14%. That was partly because people reclassified themselves from New Zealander to European. Māori were up by 6%, and the really big news in the census was that the Asian ethnicity was up by 33%, a lot more than Pacific at 11%. Middle Eastern, Latin American, African, the MELA, up by 35%, but in fact slightly more than the Asian, but it's off a very low base, so they're only a fraction of the total population. The whole theme of more Asian people in the census than had been expected comes through very strongly. And so, for example, the number of people who identified as Indian ethnic group increased by 48% between the two census periods, Chinese group by 16%, and the Filipino population by 138%. So major changes in those. So slide four. This phrase super diversity began to be used a lot towards the end of 2015. And this is Mai Chen speaking. She's set up a new center called the Super Diversity Center for Law, Policy, and Business. I've given you the link to it at the bottom. A rather lovely report about what being a super diverse country really means. And academics define super diverse cities and countries as those with more than 25% of the population being migrants and more than 100 nationalities. Well, New Zealand is much more diverse already. Almost 50% of the population are either Maori, Asian, or Pacific. 44% of our population were not born in New Zealand. Sorry, that's in Auckland, these three lines. And there are over 200 ethnicities in Auckland. Mai Chen reports that New Zealand is now the fifth most ethnically diverse country in the OECD countries, and that's extraordinary. Now home to 160 languages, and that's expected to increase. And the report is very interesting because she talks about it. It can't be business as usual because not only the talent pool, but also customers and citizens have changed and will continue to change fairly fast. And so she's got a number of things that her and the group and academics associated with it from Auckland are beginning to do about how we embrace this super diversity and therefore reap the dividend of what she calls the diversity dividend that comes to us from it. Let's have a look then at ethnicity and have a look at the births, populations and deaths. I'm going to use some figures that the Ministry of Health has. So if we move on to slide 6, this is the ethnicity of births that was projected for this year, financial year 2016, ending, of course, June 2016. And you'll see immediately that more than half the population, in fact, 55%, are either Maori, Pacific, or Asian in terms of births. That comes as quite a surprise, I think, to a number of people, because we are used to, if you look at slide 7, just thinking of the population, where the three groups together are about 35% at the moment. But it's really important in palliative care not to have your eye on the population, but to have your eye on the deaths. And slide 8 shows us the ethnicity of deaths. And you can see how much smaller that group is. It's only 18% for Maori, Pacific, and Asian together as a proportion of all deaths. Really important that we don't try and measure ourselves against the population ethnicity, but that we always measure ourselves against the deaths ethnicity. If we look at it in terms of what's happening in the population, it's because there is such a strong picture here by age. So slide 9, I've shown you what the population structure looks like for 2016, and you can see from It runs from the 0 to 4 on the left through to the 90 plus on the right. You can see this very strong wedge shape with the high number of births that I've spoken about. And, of course, many of the deaths are happening at the older ages these days. And that's why the proportion of deaths for Maori, Pacific, and Asian actually comes out looking quite small. This is the 2016 picture. If you go to slide 10, that's what the projection is for 2038. And you can see that although the Maori, Pacific, and Asian groups have all increased quite substantially, that wedge shape still persists. And I'm going to talk a lot this morning about looking for that wedge shape in the data because it's really critical that you understand that there's an age structure to what's happening with population and deaths. It's quite useful. Of course, I am always very happy if you use the slides and use them in your own context later. So you have a set, you're welcome to use them. And it's really helpful on some of these to flip backwards and forwards between 9 and 10, for example, to see the differences. Let's move on to slide 11. And this is really what's going on behind the population figures. Same information, but now drawn as lines. So each line is showing us the proportion of people in each age band for each ethnic group. And if you look at this, New Zealand as a whole is the black dotted line. That's the total population. If you look at the Maori and Pacific lines, look at how many more children there are relative to New Zealand. And then look how steep those lines are. They come from kind of the top left-hand corner down to the bottom right. And actuaries would describe that as a very young tail. It's got a kind of curvature to it. And there are very few elderly in the Maori and Pacific groups. What's interesting is if you look at the other population, which is effectively Pakeha, but it's also got some of the Mila group in there. That's the line which has the blue diamonds on it. Look how much younger that is. Fewer children than the population as a whole, as a proportion, and what we call a very fat tail. It's a very old tail, and that, of course, is what's driving still these very high numbers of the other group coming through in the deaths. The most interesting feature in this image, I was really surprised to see it at first, but it explains a lot of what's happening, is the Asian line. And look at how there are not that many Asian young children, but from the age of about 20 onwards through to at least 40, very high numbers of Asian people in the population. And that's effectively students coming in as well as working age people arriving. And it's that dynamic that will play itself out in the next few years as that population ages. So that bulge will be moving through, but also as that group sometimes bringing parents in as well, and that will change the age dynamic a lot for the Asian group, more so than Maori and Pacific. Let's move on then to slide 12 and then 13. And talk a little bit about what we then collect about ethnicity. And I'll then go on to talk a little bit about the reporting. It's a bit of a minefield, it's a huge minefield, trying to find out exactly what standards to use. And I advise anybody who's looking through the material from the ministry, from Stats New Zealand, to just record the dates of various things, because in many cases, particularly the ministry information, comes from an earlier time period. Some of the things are 2003, 2004, and there was a huge amount of work done by Statistics New Zealand with this document in 2005, which became the statistical standard for the country. And in some cases, the ministry material hasn't caught up to the new Stats New Zealand material. And you'll see this play out when I talk about standards a little bit later. But as far as I'm concerned, this is the key document for the statistical standard for New Zealand. And it's really important as we move into more and more linked data, where we're linking up material, say, from education, from IRD, from health, from social security, from ACC, that we do all use the same standard. Otherwise, the data simply will not be comparable. This is what Stats New Zealand talks about as what is ethnicity. And they describe it as ethnic group or groups that people identify with or feel that they belong to. Ethnicity is a measure of cultural affiliation. It is not race. It is not ancestry, it's not nationality, and it's not citizenship. It's a choice, a cultural choice. And very important, this phrase, self-perceived. That's the core of our understanding of how we collect ethnicity in New Zealand, is what the person themselves feels they belong to. And of course, people can belong to more than one ethnic group. So if we move on to slide 14, there's a very, very useful spreadsheet that Statistics New Zealand produced in 2005, which shows how the levels move from level 4, which has the most categories, 233 of them, up to higher and higher summary levels. And if you're remotely involved in having to program this or to record it in some way in your systems, please do have a look at that spreadsheet, because that is the official version. It has the official spellings, and a lot of the time when data isn't quite comparable, it's because people are using definitions from slightly different sources. This spreadsheet is the key one, and those of you who can't find it or don't have it, Rachel Crombie at Hospice New Zealand has copies and can easily send them to you. I can send them as well. Stats New Zealand has four levels, and I'll talk about this level 4, 3, 2, 1. But there's a confusing bit of it, and that is that the Ministry of Health has a level 0, which it uses a lot of, and no one else does. And the level 0 is the one in which we get most of the information from the Ministry of Health. So from a health perspective, we are tied into this still at the moment, whereas most of the other national material is at level 1. The Ministry of Health uses level zero. They have Māori, Pacific, Asian, and other, but there are different versions of this. There's a three-code version, a four-code version. The four-code version, the Māori, Pacific, Asian, other, is what you've just seen from me a few slides ago. And that's the one that we get the historical material in and that we get the projections in for the future. So that's a key to a lot of the material you see this morning. Slide 15 is an extract from that spreadsheet that I recommend so highly. And it gives you a sense, particularly I've taken out the extract for the beginning of the Pacific Peoples section, and you can see how the detail plays out. For Cook Islands Māori, the level four codes run all the way down to talking about people from Aitutaki, from Palmerston Island, and so on. There's a lot of detail. See also that there's a code Cook Islands Māori NFD. That means not further defined. And so if you don't find out precisely which island people identify with, it will default to the Cook Islands Māori NFD, which doesn't give us quite as much information. Some of the areas don't have much detail. So for Samoa, the level 4, level 3, and level 2 codes are all identical. The same is true for Tongan. So just be careful. There are, for certain areas, there's much more detail that one should be collecting. Level 4, as I'll show you in a moment, is the level to which we are supposed to be recording ethnicity. Slide 16, just want to remind all of us, ethnicity is not nationality or geography. And I decided to illustrate this with an example from Fiji, where some of you might know I recently got caught up in the cyclone. So it's very new, it's very top of mind. But if you're from Fiji and you are Fijian Indian, you end up being grouped under Asian because there's a code, a level 4 code, 43112, which is Fijian Indian. But the rest of people from that island are grouped under Pacific peoples under the code 36. Or 3611 to start, then 36136 Fijian. So just be very careful. This is a great reminder that it's not about nationality and it's not about geography. It's about culture. Slide 17, the report that lies behind what the current standard is for the country is this report of the review of the measurement of ethnicity. And as I said, they did a lot of work at the time thinking through it. And that's where this key statement comes from that I've highlighted, that the method of reporting ethnicity in all collections of official statistics should be self-identification. It's intriguing that Stats New Zealand says the practice of prioritizing ethnic group responses to one per individual will be discontinued, as from 2004. And so here we are sitting in 2016, finding ourselves that the ministry still does prioritize the ethnic groups. So that's where a lot of the confusion comes from. The official statistics say we won't do it, but the ministry material still does. And so you kind of need to hold the tension between these two to collect in the official way, but know that a lot of the reporting that happens in health is still done on a priority level. The official way to collect ethnicity data is on slide 18, and I've given you here the way that the question was asked in Census 2013. I find it quite frustrating. The question asks for Cook Island Māori. The official list has an S in the, it's Cook Islands Māori at the end of it. So just be careful. When you finally program this, you actually need to go with the lists that Stats New Zealand have. Because what you can see here is that the way the question is asked, there's a lot of blank space and expecting people to put in a whole range of possible results. I know some of the systems for collection, certainly in hospices around the country, work with drop boxes. So as you begin to type, so the ethnicity goes straight in with the correct spelling and with the correct code attached. But not all systems have been converted to that yet. I have mentioned standards a number of times, and if you go to slide 19, they are the two key standards that we are beholden to at the moment. On the left, the National Specialist Palliative Care Data Definition Standard, which was published 5 years ago almost, December 2011. It was updated in a minor way in June 2013. And that's the standard. If you're collecting data or you're planning new systems in the palliative care space, that's the standard you should be using for data collection. The way in which ethnicity is collected in that is the same as in this document on the right. And the document on the right is a more recent one, published December 2013, and that's what's called the HISO Consumer Health Identity Standard. And why this is so critical is that there was a complete refresh of how the NHI numbers were held, what was collected, and all the related information, age, date of birth, date of death, ethnicity, address, and so on. All of that has gone through a major refresh, and this is the Consumer Health Identity Standard that therefore applies. The Ministry doesn't apply this to all the systems of collection that they have at the moment, and that's where the confusion comes in. But this part of the Ministry, the one that's working on data standards, and you can see the Ministry logo on these two documents, this is what we should be collecting. And so just to, in slide 20, unambiguously, we are required to collect six fields for self-identified ethnicity captured to level 4 codes. Now you look at that, and I think some of you might be sighing there this morning. Six fields just sounds like overkill here. Yes, it does feel like it a bit sometimes. But if you look at slide 21, this is about people choosing more than one ethnicity. This is from the 2013 census. More than one ethnicity, 11% of people in total, but some really interesting information. More than half of Māori, 54%, identified with two or more ethnic groups. And Māori was the only major ethnic group in which people were more likely to identify with two or more groups rather than just one. So really important that we are collecting multiple ethnicities. Almost half of Māori also identified with at least one of the European ethnicities. And the report goes on to explain some of the overlaps elsewhere. For the other major groups, Pacific people also very high. 37% of them identify with two or more groups. The other really intriguing piece of information I found putting these slides together was that younger people identify with more ethnic groups than older people. And perhaps that's not so surprising with groups marrying one another and families becoming much more complex and multi-ethnicity. Children aged 0 to 14 years, 23% of them identify with more than one ethnic group, whereas those over age 65, only 3%. Now, you collect six. What on earth are we going to do with them? And slide 22 talks about the Statistics New Zealand version of what the reporting should look like. Three ways to report: what's called total response, or I also like to think of it as the overlapping response, where if somebody says that they're Asian, you count them, and if they're Asian and Pacific, you count them under both, for example. But this always adds up to more than 100%, and so it's not that useful for a lot of the kind of research work and reporting that we do in health. There's a version of it where you say if somebody is only Māori or only Pacific or only Asian, we put them in those categories, and then we have a category which deals with the multiples, or multiple categories that deal with the multiples. And that's called this sole combination approach. And then there's the prioritized approach, which, just to remind you, Stats New Zealand says they've discontinued. We've talked quite a lot at Hospice New Zealand on the data standards and about being able to help people with what to or how to report. And I was beginning to get ready to draft something from the Stats New Zealand material on it when this paper came out on slide 23, a wonderful new paper from Matt Boyd, Tony Blakely, and June Atkinson. And it's about ethnic counts, and they looked at the relationship between the mortality data, the cancer registry, and the census data. But the best part about this paper from our perspective is that they describe the three methods in detail: the total ethnicity, the prioritized ethnicity, which as researchers they do use, and sole ethnicity. And why I really like this paper and suggest you have a look at it if you're doing anything to do with your own systems is it describes very clearly how you get to these. And my sense is that this is we'll use this as the basis for any kind of notes that people need about just what to do with all these six ethnicities. How do you bring them to something that's meaningful for reporting? I think the other interesting thing in this paper by Matt Boyd and colleagues is that they discovered that the census, the relationship between data in different systems has improved quite dramatically. But what they found was that by region, Maori deaths and cancer registrations were underestimated more in those DHBs that had low proportions of Maori in their population. So they've got some maps in the paper about where the collection was worst. And it was effectively South Island struggles more with this than other areas around the country. I think Auckland, particularly with its multi-ethnicities, has been, if anything, a lot more careful about the collection of multiple ethnicity. But it's one of the reasons I talked about how many Maori do identify with more than one category, and so don't make assumptions, rather ask people. I think one of the areas and the reasons that researchers do this, of course, is to be able to look at inequalities and inequities. And slide 24, while I'm talking about papers from Tony Blakely and the University of Otago Wellington group, a really helpful paper on what is the difference between an inequality and an inequity, and some really thought-provoking material on how to distinguish between the two, which I won't spend more time on this morning. Let's have a quick look then at the evidence that's come out of recent projects. So slide 25, I'm going to be talking reasonably quickly about the new evidence coming out of the study of mortality data. Many of you will know the slides I did from 2000 to 2010 in the past. That's been extended to 2013 and was just finished a few weeks ago and presented to the Palliative Care Advisory Panel. So, slide 26. This is the ethnicity of deaths in New Zealand, and I've shown it to you. This is over that historic period. I've shown it to you in two ways, level 1 on the left and level 0 on the right. And you'll see there's almost no difference between the two when we do it that way. That's because the Mila and the other ethnicity are such a tiny proportion, only 0.4 of the entire group at the moment. And in that sense, that's why the level 0 is what we use for most reporting, because the other parts are just too tiny to bring through. 27, the ethnicity of deaths over time. You can see an expansion, small expansion in the Maori numbers and in Pacific and in Asian, but predominantly, of course, it's still other, which is mostly Pakeha. And in slide 28, showing you from the deaths that wedge shape. Really interesting. Just look at the high proportion of deaths in the younger ages from Maori, Pacific, and Asian. And you have to overlay that with what I said earlier about there being more people in the population in those ages. But, of course, then what researchers are looking for is where those numbers are higher than would be expected otherwise. But just to remind ourselves about where deaths occurred, what the ages at which they occur, I've put a black line on here for the number of deaths by age. And you can see how those deaths are really in those years where the proportions of Maori, Pacific, and Asian are very low. And that's why when you just report it as a single number, it seems like there are so few Maori, Pacific, and Asian deaths. Very important to be looking for this wedge shape in your data when you're starting to compare and see how you're doing relative to everyone else. I truly advocate that you need to do most work in healthcare by age and by gender if you've got enough data, but certainly by age, because the patterns are so strong and so rich in terms of understanding. I'm sure around the country this morning there are people who are beginning to say, but that doesn't happen in my setting. And so in slides 29 and 30, I'm going to show you that wedge across four other settings. Slide 29, the left-hand side is that wedge in public hospitals, and the right-hand side of slide 29 is that wedge for private residents and hospice IPU together. Hospice IPU is quite a small part of it, and so I've put it together with deaths in private residents. Not really too concerned at the moment here about the somewhat differences in the color scheme, the slightly flatter Maori numbers in the public hospital by age. Just really important that wedge shape sticks in your mind. And I'm sure you're saying that doesn't happen in residential care. Slide 30 on the left, that's residential care. There are very few deaths in residential care at the younger ages, but where they're happening, look at the high proportions of Maori, Pacific, and Asian. On the right-hand side, other settings, which are beaches and roads and rivers and the likes, again, very strong wedge shape. So when you're looking at your own data, look at it by age and have a look to see whether you're getting the beginnings of a wedge shape in there, because that will tell you whether you are reaching the people who are dying at the younger ages. Slide 31, of course, regional differences. If we look at it just on a single number per region, I've given you the slide for the country as a whole, broken down into DHBs and broken down into regions. And of course, South Island, very low numbers there. On the extreme left-hand side, the northern region with the largest numbers. Let's have a look at that in wedge shapes. Slide 32 on the left has the northern region, and on the right, Midland. Strong wedge shapes for both of them. What's interesting about the northern one, of course, is just the very high proportions of Pacific and Asian lives. Whereas if you look at Midland, they have very low Pacific and Asian, and of course very high Maori. This is the kind of picture. I'm not keen on going right down to the DHB level to look at it, because very often there's not enough data to get this out properly. Certainly, though, the regional pictures are giving enough of a stability to be able to use it for comparisons. And so I've given you these so that you can look at your regions and begin to have this kind of conversation as to whether you're reaching those younger deaths of other ethnicities other than other. Sorry, that got complicated. Slide 33, the remaining two regions, Central on the left, South Island on the right. And although, of course, the wedge for Central is much steeper, South Island does have a wedge shape to it too. And of course, with the rebuild in Christchurch, that shape has been changing quite fast. A lot of people coming down from other parts of the country. Remember, these figures only go as far as 2013. And I suspect that we'll see that wedge shape in South Island altering quite a bit faster than we had projected. Right, that's the end of looking historically. Let me look into the future using material from Statistics New Zealand as provided to the Ministry of Health. And this is from a project I did for hospices funded by the Ministry, where we were helping them with some planning for the next few years. And they've been putting in proposals of what they will do with some additional funding that was available. So this is projections of deaths through to 2038. Very important, those ministry projections only go from 2016 to 2038. They don't go all the way through to the 2068, which I like to use as well. But these are the detailed ones by DHB and by ethnicity. And so and they're also the ones, of course, that DHBs use for planning. So they're very useful for us to look at in detail. Important thing here, we're at roughly at about 30,000 deaths a year at the moment. And it's projected to be an increase from 30,000 deaths, 30,500 this year, to 40,000 by 2033. And that's a huge jump. You know, we're talking about a third more deaths in that 17-year period. In the 5 years that follow that, the rate of escalation picks up, and annual deaths increase by about 1,000 each year for each of the next 5 years, so that they reach 45,000 deaths a year by June 2038. That's only 22 years away, and certainly from a workforce planning perspective, it's not far away. And that's one of the reasons I use these numbers so often, just to alert people to the fact that we have to begin to think differently. So if we take this by ethnicity, on slide 35, over this 22-year period, the number of deaths each year is projected to increase by 48% from current levels. That's almost half. If we look at Maori on their own, it's 48% as well. Pacific, almost the same, a little bit more, 50%. But look at the Asian number. It's an increase of, and it's always hard when it goes over a couple of 100% because you're not too sure what you're looking at. It's an increase of 270%, or in fact, 3.7 times current levels. That's a phenomenal increase in Asian deaths expected. And important, I know certainly the Auckland DHB has been looking at these numbers, really important to in thinking about that for the future. But it's not just Auckland. And as Immigration New Zealand attempts to ensure that people are spread more evenly or immigrants are spread more evenly around the country, so don't expect this to be an Auckland issue at all. It is for all of us. So let's have a look then. Slide 36 is this picture into the future of by numbers of deaths and by ethnicity. Slide 37 turns that into proportions, and you can see that proportionately we do still have a lot of other deaths in the mix. Just cast your eye though on the Maori part of it there, and you know that hovers just above 10% and doesn't seem to go up a great deal. Certainly, if I go back to slide 36 for a moment, the absolute numbers increase, but proportionately they don't. And that's a really interesting finding. If we look at slide 38, I've graphed just that proportion of Maori deaths in the projections, and you can see it hovers from 10.8, 10.9, 10, 11, back to 10.9. You know, that sort of difference is meaningless, actually. One should just round that up. It stays at 10, pretty much, or just above 10, 11% throughout that projected period. But of course, the actual numbers are increasing. What's more interesting about the projected Maori deaths is in slide 39. And this, in the latest version I got, we got all the deaths by age and gender for each DHB. Very useful information into the future. The hospices all have a set of this, which is built into a spreadsheet that they have for projections, and that they're able to use when talking to their DHBs. So these projected Maori deaths, 2016 and 2038, slide 39, the dark part of it is where we are in 2016. The lighter turquoise color is the age structure that's expected by 2038. Look at the difference. Fewer deaths in that kind of 40 to 70 period or 65 period, many more deaths at older ages. And so, yes, it's a really interesting change. If we look quickly at the other ethnic groups, similar kind of thing happening for Pacific deaths in the projections. This is with improved longevity for both those groups. The projected Asian deaths, here I'm showing you the actual numbers of deaths. You can see how just that huge extra tail at the end, very high numbers of elderly Asian deaths coming through in the mix. And then the other group, aging of the deaths, more older deaths as well. But of course, that shape is already like a ski slope, whereas for Pacifica and Maori, it moves from kind of a humped shape to a ski slope shape over that time period. Right, slide 43. I've finished looking at the history and looking at the projections into the future. And I want to say a few words about the third project, the ethnicity of patients in hospices, because this is you're trying to collect the data to see how hospices are doing relative to this national picture has been a major goal of the project. Slide 44, and my huge thanks as I start this section to the hospices. 28 of 29 hospices were able to give us data, gave us 99% coverage around the country. It was absolutely astounding. One small hospice wasn't able to, and we were able to do some estimates from their previous year's figures, but they were less than 1% of the total. So this is astounding. For the first time, we have a really clear picture by age of the patients in hospices, and this is the shape of it in slide 44. Really want to thank hospices for all their hard work in this. It's been a huge effort in trying to standardize data and pull it into an environment where we can share it and put it into a national picture. And thank you for your help and your diligence in that regard. The slide 44 is the shape of patients in hospices. Slide 45 is the shape of deaths that happened related to hospices. Similar kind of shape, very few at the younger ages, some coming in over 100 now, but most of the deaths in the sort of 65 through to 85 and 90 areas. Slide 46, just talking a little bit about what I actually received from all the hospices. All the 28 hospices that gave in data did submit ethnicity information. That was fantastic. But there were a number of different ways of storing and submitting. And no hospice was yet submitting in that HISO format of level 4 code and 6 fields. Having said that, this was financial year 2015. And a large group of hospices, 19 of them, moved to full HISO compliance as of July 2015. And so the 2016 data, which is currently being collected, will be to the full HISO standard. But for the 2015 data, which I finished analyzing, only two hospices submitted multiple ethnicity fields. Some of them had already were collecting multiple, but had collapsed it down. But even those that were collecting multiples were not collecting all six. So in slide 47, I've shown that graphically. The ones that were collecting at the L4 level are shown in dark green, and that was actually quite a lot of hospices. It was 73% of hospice patients. I got level 4 ethnicity, which was fantastic. But then I got some which were level 3, level 2, a little bit at level 1, and this is where you can see some people had two fields, some had one. It was a bit of a mix of all sorts of things that arrived. What did we do with it? Slide 48 is an example of the sort of thing that we've done then for hospices to be able to use at a national level. By having that L4 ethnicity code, we can say how many ethnicities did hospices see. And there are 233 groups at the level 4. I found 61 different groups in the hospice data. Now, it's higher than last year, but I think this is still substantially undercounting how many different ethnicities we see. Because if you look down the L4 list, a lot of the L4 I was given was, for example, Cook Islands Maori not further defined, or Pacific peoples not further defined, or Indian not further defined. So there's actually more detail below that. And I think once we start recording those that detail, when people have voiced it, that we will see more. My gut sense at the moment, maybe 150, 160 groups, perhaps more, I'm not sure. But I'll be really interested to watch this in the years to come. Slide 49, I'm not going to go into the detail, but it enables us to say what proportions are we seeing of different ethnic groups around the country in hospices. Slide 50, I just want to show you what happens there. You know, earlier on I showed you what happened when I looked at the ministry data at level 1 and level 0. And here what I'm doing is looking at the hospice data by level 1 and level 0. On the right-hand side on slide 50, level 0. And it looks like we have 11% Maori, just under 4% Pacific, and just under 3% Asian. But if you go back and look at level 1 here, we've got a little bit of Milo, we've got a little bit of other. Look at the unknown. The problem is that unknown becomes collapsed into other if we use this level 0. And in fact, it's actually critical. We must be very careful about using level 0 type reporting without looking underneath it and seeing how much we've really got in the unknown. And this unknown is high, 7%. If you think of taking that 7, imagine 2% of that 7 actually belongs to Maori, or it belongs to Asian. We just don't know. And that's why I'm so keen and so delighted to have been able to speak to you this morning about just how important it is to record something there rather than just leave it blank. So slide 51, were we able to do something by age for hospices? Well, here it is at the level 0 ethnicity, and there isn't a wedge shape there. It looks a bit low at the early ages. How reliable is this? Slide 52, I go back to looking at it at level 1, where we've got the unknowns in there, and just look at the size proportionately of the unknown in those younger groups. That means that the Maori or the Asian could be completely different to what we're seeing at the moment. And so we can't say too much about whether hospices are reaching those groups until we have pretty much eradicated. I'd like to eradicate unknown ethnicity if we can from the data. In slide 53, I've given you the same picture on deaths. The 52 is the patients, 53 is the deaths. And then I tried to break those deaths into regions because this would give us a sense of whether the regions were meeting those wedge shapes that I showed you in the national data earlier. So this would be comparing hospices and being able to look at that early picture of all deaths in the country and start looking to see whether there are gaps. So when I look here, slide 54, I'm going to start with Central on the left and South Island on the right. South Island had more unknown ethnicity than Central did, and Central has got a really nice wedge shape there. South Island has the beginnings of one. If I look at slide 55, Midland, where there is still a big chunk of unknown, but they've got a really neat wedge shape there. Northern, we struggled, and that's because one of the hospices there only was able to give us data in wider age bands, not in these age bands, something that we're working with them on to try to rectify next time. And I just wasn't prepared to try to allocate their ethnicity across the age bands to really know what it looked like. So we don't have a good picture yet of Northern. And it's a, this is a classic example of where standardizing our collection into the same age bands, into the same groups, will help us to see the picture properly at a regional level. So just some final comments before, and I'd like to leave just a few minutes at the end. Ethnicity, does it, why does it matter? You know, I'm very conscious that on the front line, what matters at the bedside is the patient and the family. It's not about collecting data. And I want to be the last person telling you that you've got to do more data collection when I'd rather that you were there with the family at the time of someone crossing over. But we do need it for various things. A key one is to check disparities in outcomes and also for planning. We won't know if we're not meeting the need in for particular groups or meeting obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi if we don't collect this data. Slide 58, I just want to point you to a new paper by Donna Cormack and colleagues. Quite a shock to read this. It's a very challenging new paper from them on ethnicity in primary care and how people chose to identify themselves with the New Zealand European rather than Maori because they thought they'd get better care. Urge you to read it. We need to make sure that we don't provide that kind of perception in our health system. Slide 59, just another example where we tried to have a look at things by ethnicity. And here again, big group of unable to provide. Let's go quickly to slide 60. What happened was that we discovered that what we'd love to know, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that more Maori prefer to be at home or are dying at home rather than in hospice IPU, for example. Love to be able to test out that assertion. But when I looked at it by ethnicity, the lack of collection of place of death in some cases and the lack of collection of ethnicity combines in such a way that we only know about 50% of what's happening to Pacific people, and there are big gaps throughout the others. So again, a plea. If you're asked to input something, it really does help. If we looked at slide 61, there are some big chunks of unknown here that are in wider bands that we can't look at, but I do think there is the beginnings of a shape here on both sides. Slide 61 shows Maori on the left, other on the right, and despite all my reservations about missing data, the beginnings of a wedge shape are there and more people dying in private residence than elsewhere. Finally, two things. Self-identification, something that I saw when I was doing some work for the University of Canterbury a few years ago. This was a very thought-provoking comment, and I'll leave you to read a lot of the detail later. But self-identification kind of imagines that the person is adult and well and able to articulate this. We have to remind ourselves that the collection of ethnicity data at birth, it's usually the parents who are giving that ethnicity. And as Statistics New Zealand has some lovely quotes there about, in making their decision, parents may consider factors such as ancestry, how the child will be brought up, what degree of cultural competency the child will attain. And in making this assessment, standards are often set relative to the parents' or grandparents' strength of ethnic affiliation. At the other end of life, at death, the collection of ethnicity is probably from the next of kin. And this is then potentially a child, a grandchild, a spouse, a sibling, sometimes a parent or grandparent, but not always. And so while the same criteria may be applied for assessing ethnicity, a grandchild's judgment on the strength of ethnic affiliation is unlikely to match the criteria a grandparent would have used. Very important. You know, if we want to have an understanding, slide 63, while you have the opportunity, ask, so the person themselves has an opportunity to give their ethnic affiliation. Right, that's the end of it. Thank you very much indeed.